Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid. Tom Turnwald runs an Ohio millwork company that was started by his father and employs his kids.
I'm in favor of wind farms because I'm committed to attracting talent to our community, and the school districts with wind turbines get resources that can make a huge difference in kids' lives.
Since 2012, an Avangrid wind farm has strengthened the economy and contributes millions to the community each year. To learn more about where energy meets humanity, visit avangrid.com. That's avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily.
Elon Musk is now the biggest shareholder in Twitter.
Elon Musk just disclosed the purchase of over 73 million shares of Twitter. That makes him a 9.2%.
Last week, when the billionaire entrepreneur Elon Musk made a major investment in Twitter.
This is technically what's called a passive stake at the moment, but I don't think Elon Musk does anything in a passive way. I think this is the beginning of something bigger.
It was seen as a chance by the company to turn the business world's most unpredictable man into an ally. Instead, it has plunged Twitter into a very public drama over its future. I spoke with my colleague, technology reporter Mike Isaac. It's Thursday, April 14th.
Mike, what is it about Silicon Valley and corporate drama?
That tends to go together like I don't know.
Horse and carriage?
A horse and carriage, yeah.
Speaking of drama, where does this drama begin?
So about 2 weeks ago, Elon Musk, as you know, the CEO of Tesla, the founder of SpaceX, early PayPal creator, guy who does a million things at once.
And is fantastically wealthy.
Oh, yeah. He also happens to be the richest man in the world. He decides to start buying up a bunch of shares of Twitter, the company. He's a power user of the service. He's someone who tweets a lot if you follow him. He has 80 million plus followers. Wow. And so sort of quietly, without anyone really noticing, at least initially, he starts buying up shares of Twitter.
How many shares?
Yeah, not just a few. He buys up millions of shares, basically amassing a sort of private pile that ultimately ends up to about 9.2% of outstanding shares in the entire company.
Which is not a typical investment. It's just not beefing up your stock portfolio. That is a huge investment.
You do not call your E-Trade broker to to buy up 10% of a company. No, he ultimately becomes the company's largest shareholder through doing this, sort of quietly, basically.
Mm-hmm.
No one really knows about it except Twitter Inc., you know, catches wind and basically is like, uh-oh, this is happening. We need to do something about it.
And why is that an uh-oh moment for Twitter? Because the sense is that when he touches a company, it pretty much turns to gold for investors. So why would he not be welcomed by Twitter? Why is Twitter thinking to itself, uh-oh?
Well, no, I mean, I think that's fair. I think, you know, look at Elon's past, right?
The world has been under this illusion that electric cars cannot be as good as gasoline cars. That
the guy revolutionized the electric car industry.
It's showing that that an electric car can in fact be the best car in the world. That's what makes it really important.
Yeah. He turned Tesla, the company, into this sort of juggernaut on Wall Street. And
do you want the future where we become a space-faring civilization and are in many worlds?
With SpaceX is literally working with the government to put people into space, to carry payloads into space, you know, commercial sort of space travel in a way.
I think we should really do our very best to become a multi-planet species and to extend consciousness beyond Earth. And we should do it now. Thank you.
You know, the guy is a big thinker, and you could argue that bringing a big thinker might be something that Twitter needs. You know, maybe after years of criticism that Twitter, the product, has been stagnant or needs an overhaul, you know, maybe Elon Musk is the guy to do it. And, you know, as it happens, Elon does have a bunch of ideas about how to change it. You know, he kind of decides to go on Twitter and tweet out those ideas, basically riff on what the product should be or might look like at some point. There's this like bandied about idea of a Twitter edit button, you know, something that doesn't exist right now. But if they did create it, it could look like maybe going back and changing your tweet if you misspelled something in it.
Mm-hmm.
He also has poked at this idea of making Twitter open source and creating what he calls decentralized version of Twitter. The idea is essentially to let users kind of moderate themselves and decide what kind of Twitter they want to see, what version of the network they want to participate in. And that's, you know, generally kind of the way Elon views the world. You know, it's about giving power back to the users, kind of this, you know, free speech should flourish everywhere online, whatever that, you know, might mean to you or me, and letting us choose our version of Twitter rather than Twitter Inc., you know, someone at the top.
Hmm.
So basically they see a successful businessman who has a lot of ideas on how to change and innovate the product. And he has, you know, a track record of turning big ideas into potentially world-changing businesses. And perhaps that's not necessarily a bad thing if he's suddenly more interested in getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, Elon is Elon.
Hmm.
With Elon Musk comes a lot of baggage, I guess is what I would say. So the guy is, you know, famously mercurial. He decides to sort of do what he wants when he wants to do it, no matter what the consequences often.
What are some examples?
So one of the most famous cases, probably a few years back.
CEO Elon Musk creating chaos with a single tweet.
Elon Musk tweeting that he is considering taking the company private at $420 per share.
Tweeted that he was considering taking his company private at a stock price of $420.
$420 a share.
$420.
Where did $420 come from?
Initially, it seemed like a joke. $420 is, what is it, the pot number, right? So, like, everyone was...
Oh, like you don't know that.
That's what I've been told. So, so everyone's like, ha, ha, ha. But
the SEC is suing Tesla CEO Elon Musk, accusing him of fraud and alleging that Musk issued false and misleading statements.
You know, actually got him in a lot of trouble with the SEC and ended up being a full investigation.
Now he and Tesla are paying the price to the tune of $40 million.
It turns out he had to get a slap on the wrist and deal with a whole lot of regulatory issues. And that's the thing with him. You kind of never know what you're going to get. If this dude who decides to have fun or have a joke, it has repercussions. And that can have repercussions for your multi-billion dollar company that is traded publicly, that has stock prices that are connected to people's 401ks or portfolios.
Right.
I think the other thing to think about is how, you know, some people think that Elon Musk sometimes uses Twitter in actually a pretty dangerous way.
And what do you mean by that?
He'll get into these sort of random scraps with people online, you know? I mean, you know, Twitter fights are not uncommon, but when you're fighting against Elon Musk, it can end up with his sort of legions of fans kind of being sicked on different people. For example, a few years back, there was a bunch of kids trapped in a cave in Thailand, I believe.
Right, underwater. I remember it.
And there was a guy who was a cave diver. He was trying to go and sort of save these kids. The story becomes national news.
Elon Musk says a device he built is on its way to Thailand to help with the cave rescue efforts.
Elon Musk gets involved. He says he's going to send a submarine. The cave diver guy essentially says,
it wouldn't have made the first 50 meters into the cave from the dive start point.
Musk's efforts weren't that helpful.
Just a PR stunt.
And so
Musk responded in a series of tweets where he called the diver a pedo guy, referring to the diver.
Musk decides to lash back out at the guy by calling him essentially a pedophile with no proof on Twitter, which is crazy. And once he says that, his millions of followers who adore Elon sort of can go after the cave diving guy, who is sort of an innocent bystander throughout this whole thing, because Elon decided to get mad at him.
So essentially, he acts like a troll, and he happens to be one of the world's most powerful executives.
I think troll is a perfect way to describe him. I think he probably would acknowledge that himself. And half the time, you don't know if he's serious or not, which is potentially dangerous to have at the helm of a public company.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing Twitter is thinking about at this point, too, is not just, you know, whether the guy is going to troll people, you know, online or troll the company, but the world's richest man is buying up a significant amount of your stock all at once. And they're thinking, is this the grounds for an eventual takeover? You know, you have to remember that Elon years ago was not the original CEO of Tesla. He came in later after he initiated a takeover of that company, not exactly a welcome one. And, you know, folks can argue that it turned out well, but it was not a peaceful transition necessarily. So if you're the CEO of Twitter and you're looking at Elon Musk, who has a history of sort of coming on very aggressively, and he's buying up a ton of your stock, you're worried, you know, what's Elon going to do? So
right.
I think that's the other thing that really raised their eyebrows.
Right. So that's the story behind the Utto. For all those reasons you just described, Twitter has very real reservations about having Elon Musk become a major stakeholder in their company.
Yeah, 100%. I think they are genuinely torn. You know, Jack Dorsey, co-founder of Twitter, still on the board, actually loves Elon, has said in a sort of public bromance moment that he loves Elon and he's a good heart and very smart. And so they do like appreciate the feedback from this guy. But at the same time, his very aggressive come on gives them all sort of a moment of pause and they have to figure out what to do, essentially.
Right. So what does Twitter do?
Yeah. So, you know, Twitter starts seeing this happening. And, you know, the new CEO, Parag Agrawal, who's only been there as the head of the company for a few months, he has to be like, all right, well, what are we going to do to sort of remedy this situation? Mm-hmm. Basically, they hatch this sort of plan. They approach Elon. They say, hey, you know, noticed you're buying up a lot of our stock. You know, can we help you with anything? From what I've been able to report so far, it starts out pretty friendly, you know. And the idea they have essentially is to, I guess I would say, co-opt the chaos agent of Elon, right? Bring him on to the board of directors, say, you know, we'd love to have your input. We'd love for you to be a part of this. You know, we'd love to get you at the top of the company and or at least on the board and take your sort of advice. And everything will be great and we don't have to worry about a hostile takeover.
Right. They're going to keep their friends close and their Elon Musk's close.
Exactly. But the sort of quid pro quo here is, as a condition of you coming onto the board, we would also love it if you would sign this agreement that you're not going to buy more than X amount of stock to amass like a controlling stake and be able to push us around in a big way.
Mm.
You're not going to initiate a hostile takeover at some point. And part of the agreement of joining a board in the first place, you know, comes with a lot of restrictions or like the assumption that you won't, say, tweet, you know, material things that might harm the well-being of the company or the stock price of the company or, you know, just say things off the cuff that can actually have a very big impact about the company that you're currently sitting on the board of.
Right.
And so these are the sort of peacemaking terms that we'd like as a sign of good faith for you to come onto our board.
Interesting. And the thinking here is we'll put some guardrails around you. We'll bring you inside the tent. You won't take us over.
Yeah.
We'll take your advice. This will all work out just fine.
Yeah. And, you know, to Twitter's sort of surprise and delight, Elon agrees.
Elon Musk will be joining the board of directors for Twitter. Twitter making that announcement today after Musk bought a 9.2% stake in the company. Musk has been.
And so they announce it to the world that, you know, they've come to an agreement. Elon's going to join the board.
The terms are very clear. Elon Musk joins the board as a class two director.
Everything's going to end up, you know, happily ever after or whatever.
He can only hold up to 14.9% in terms of a stake during his term as director and 90 days thereafter. And there was some
and it actually does seem like it might be going okay. You know, Parag Agrawal, the CEO, he tweets out.
Parag Agrawal saying, I'm excited to share that we're appointing Elon Musk to our board.
You know, happy to have Elon on board.
And long-term welcome, Elon, and Elon responded.
Elon does a little tweet saying.
Said he was looking forward to joining them to make significant improvements.
You know, can't wait to work with the CEO of Twitter. And, and just sort of like everyone's playing very nicely. Wall Street kind of goes wild.
Twitter shares, they are surging right now.
The stock price surges some 27% in one day.
Musk is already raising the possibility of a feature many Twitter users have been asking for.
Elon starts dribbling out little sort of ideas for product stuff on Twitter.
Musk tweeted a poll last night, do you want an edit button? With more than 1 million responses within 2 hours, an overwhelming majority voted yes.
Initially, at least, everyone's kind of like, whoa, this might actually work out for us, you know? At least everyone inside of Twitter HQ at the top is saying this might actually be a good thing.
Right, the great co-opting seems to have succeeded.
Yeah, I mean, initially it seemed like everything was going great. But then it all started to fall apart.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times, and they will do it again to protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights. Join the ACLU today to help stop the extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.
I use New York Times cooking at least 3 to 4 times a week.
I love sheet pan bibimbap. It said 35 minutes. It was 35 minutes.
The cucumber salad with soy, ginger, and garlic. Oh my God, that is just to die for.
This turkey chili has over 17,000 five-star ratings. So easy, so delicious.
The instructions are so clear, so simple, and it just works.
Hey, it's Eric Kim from New York Times Cooking. Come cook with us. Go to nytcooking.com.
So, Mike, how did things start to fall apart here?
So, you know, a few days later, after everything has sort of quieted down, people are starting to accept, hey, Elon is coming on the board. This might work out. Saturday morning comes around and Elon starts the morning off with a tweet.
It's been a full week of Twitter drama with Elon Musk using the platform to toy with the social media giant.
He basically posts, is Twitter dying? And then he goes on to list these examples of, you know, some of the most popular people on the service.
He said, most of these top accounts rarely tweet.
Nothing from Taylor Swift in 3 months and Justin Bieber, one post all year.
Which is something people might not have noticed until he brought it up in the first place, you know?
Right. I don't think I thought about it.
Right. I mean, I don't obsessively follow Bieber's account anymore. He then does not stop.
He has been posting a whole lot, trying to poll users about Twitter.
One question he put was, delete the W in Twitter?
He just tweeted that they should take the W out of Twitter, which you can get that joke.
The options, yes or of course.
And then he goes even further. He continues by saying, you know, should we convert Twitter's San Francisco headquarters to a homeless shelter since no one shows up anyway?
Twitter as a homeless shelter. I'm kidding? Well, why not, said Musk. Everyone at Twitter is working remotely anyway.
Which, you know, is pretty extreme, but also people are sort of in the middle of a pandemic, so that's a weird thing to tweet.
But as a major shareholder now, he ought to be careful because what he says can drive down the stock, reducing the value of his stake in the company. But maybe he's rich enough that he just doesn't give a damn.
Right, and none of these communications are at all in line with the legal and financial responsibilities of a member of a board of directors of a company. I mean, at all.
Yeah, I mean, it does make sense, but also it's just, it doesn't happen, right? That's just something you don't expect.
Right, and what is the response inside Twitter?
So it's an immediate 5-alarm fire inside of Twitter. Executives start to realize, you know, clearly their plan to co-opt Elon and put him on the board and sort of calm him down is not working, as you saw by all his tweets that day. And, you know, they have to figure out what they're going to do next.
I mean, I think this is basically what Twitter feared at the outset and why they wanted him to come inside the corporate tent and be governed by all these rules of serving on a board.
Yeah, 100%. I think those initial worries that they had were essentially justified by Elon going back to being Elon. And so on Sunday, Twitter CEO has another announcement. And that is that Elon Musk has decided not to join the company's board of directors.
Tesla CEO Elon Musk has decided not to join the board of directors of Twitter. Chief executive Parag Agrawal making the announcement on Twitter Sunday night. According to the tweet, Musk was offered a seat, but he turned it down.
And it's not that Twitter doesn't want him on the board. It's the other way around. Elon Musk is rejecting Twitter. He is deciding he doesn't want to be on their board.
I mean, it certainly appears that way, at least in the way that they phrased it.
Agrawal said in his tweet that the board would remain open to his input.
There will be distractions ahead, but our goals and priorities remain unchanged. The decisions we make and how we execute is in our hands and no one else's.
Musk limited his response to a face with hand over mouth emoji on Twitter.
But why do we think that would be? And why would he suddenly not want to be on the board?
I think at some point over the weekend, you know, Elon essentially realized that agreeing to be on the board of a company comes with a lot more strings than he wants to be attached, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the agreements is acting in the best interest of the company's shareholders. It's called fiduciary responsibility, you know?
Right.
You can't lob criticisms like grenades at the company when you feel like it on a Saturday because you're bored, you know? And I think Elon doesn't like being put in a box that way. He almost preferred his initial positioning, which was, I'm already a guy with tens of millions of followers. I'm already, you know, amassing a good amount of stock. You have to listen to me anyway. Why would I sort of feel handcuffed or, you know, silenced on the board of directors when I can do it from the outside? And I think he figured that out and decided, nope, I'm out. I don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm. So what should we take from all this? Because on the one hand, this may seem like the simple story of a renegade businessman who doesn't want to be penned in by the rules. But I'm now remembering that you told us that part of the deal he signed onto was that he wouldn't buy more and more of Twitter's stock and therefore couldn't take it over. So if he backs out of this deal, should we also assume that he's now free and perhaps desires to keep taking over more and more of Twitter?
That is a correct assumption. All bets are off, essentially, at this point. That agreement that he made, which is called a standstill agreement to not buy more stock, no longer is applicable. On Monday, the very next day after the announcement, there was another filing, basically says Mr. Musk no longer has to abide by the previous agreement. He can buy more stock if he wishes to. He can initiate a hostile takeover of the company if he wishes to.
Wow.
My favorite line was he can change his plans at any time if he so wishes, which is probably the most
which was
Elon
true before,
thing ever. Yeah, exactly.
Which was true before that statement came out.
That's exactly right.
So now we're back to this big cosmic question, which is what would it look like if Elon Musk were to try to take over Twitter? Because Twitter is a big deal. It's easy to dismiss Twitter. It's an addiction. It's a place people go to talk trash about each other. But it's also one of the world's great town squares. It's where revolutions like the Arab Spring have been amplified and spread. It's where conspiracy theories and extremism have festered. It's an important part of the global conversation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think the big question mark for a lot of folks is, what does he want to do with it? You know, he has for a long time said he thinks there needs to be big changes. He thinks that, for example, Twitter might restrict certain types of speech that he feels is really important to have out there. You know, it's a similar sort of refrain to a lot of conservatives feel like big tech is oppressing conservative speech on the platform or tamping down what should be louder voices. And I think Elon Musk has a lot in common with that point of view. On the other hand, you know, folks believe that Twitter needs even more reining in, and it's a really toxic place a lot of the time for a lot of people who use the service, you know, perhaps.
Right. In fact, that's why there's so much talk about regulating Twitter as well as its fellow social media platforms.
Facebook, TikTok, all of them, of course. And, you know, that version is sort of in line with the way Twitter has been going over the past few years. You know, they've been building more tools to handle harassment. They've been amping up, along with Facebook, their moderation sort of abilities and trying to cut down on all of that misinformation and vitriol that you've been referencing. And so it's almost like two different paths that people are sort of looking at and wondering, which one are we going to go down?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing that folks are left with now is the question of what is he going to do next? And, you know, that's sort of always been the question around Elon, but I think we have to revert to what we know about Elon. You know, the guy goes into every industry he wants to all the way. You know, he's not a 50% type of guy.
Right.
You know, whether that's pushing into the space industry, whether it's electrifying cars, whether it's changing how people pay for stuff online, you know, with PayPal, he's really just gone all the way and transformed a lot of these industries. And so, you know, he has a history of doing this, but I think Twitter is kind of different. It's not a hardware company. It's a communication service.
Right.
You know, and even if your mom or your neighbor down the street isn't on Twitter, they're somehow being sort of touched by what goes on the service. You know, all of the stuff that happens on Twitter tends to leak out across other media, whether it's TV, Facebook, or the front page of the New York Times.
Indeed.
So I think it really does matter with his intentions for this service. And you know, whatever you think about Elon Musk, you can't deny that the guy's been transformative. And now he's looking at a platform used by hundreds of millions of people, and he wants to transform it. And when Elon Musk wants to transform something, history shows that he transforms it.
Or he could just be trolling all of us.
I mean, or he could be just trolling all of us. Yes.
All right, Mike. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
On Thursday morning, Elon Musk offered to buy Twitter outright in a $43 billion hostile takeover. If the offer is not accepted, Musk said in a government filing, he would need to reconsider his investment in the company. In the filing, Musk said, quote, "Twitter has extraordinary potential. I will unlock it." We'll be right back.
Hey, it's John Chase.
And Mari Uehara.
From Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times. Mari, it is gift-giving time. What's an easy gift for someone like under 50 bucks?
So in our Gifts Under 50 guide, we have this super cute palm-sized Bluetooth speaker. It comes in an array of cool colors. It's waterproof. You can bring it anywhere. I want one for my garden.
I love it. Check out all of Wirecutter's gift recommendations for yourself and everyone else at nytimes.com/holidayguide.
Many think of beauty and health as disconnected, but beauty and wellness are really two sides of the same coin. Hello, I'm Isabella Rossellini, and in the final episode of This Is Not a Beauty podcast, we'll hear from a cancer survivor, an anthropologist, and a carer of the elderly about the relationship between beauty and health. Listen now on your favorite podcast platform.
Here's what else you need to Notre Dame.
My fellow New Yorkers, we got it.
On Wednesday,
New York City police arrested the suspect in the city's worst subway shooting in decades, 62-year-old Frank James, who was captured in the East Village of Manhattan. James is accused of putting on a gas mask, detonating two smoke grenades, and shooting 10 people inside a Manhattan-bound N train on Tuesday morning. Police have yet to identify a possible motive, but said that James had left crucial evidence at the scene, including a credit card with his name on it, and the key to a van that he had rented. And the Times reports that in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, two more European countries, Finland and Sweden, are seriously considering applying for membership to the NATO military alliance and are widely expected to join it. If they do, it would highlight how much Russia's military operation in Ukraine, which was designed to weaken NATO, has instead strengthened it. Today's episode was produced by Rob Zipko and Rochelle Banja, with help from Michael Simon Johnson. It was edited by Paige Cowett and Mark George, and was engineered by Chris Wood. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landberg of Wonderly. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.